Brandon Weikert with us. We're going to take calls with him this hour as we're talking about the very strange story of these craft, whatever they may be. We'll chat with him a little bit more and then take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Brandon Weikert with us. Brandon, Peter Pry, who heads up a National and Homeland Security Advisory Board, believes strongly that these are either Chinese or Russian.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a pretty sharp guy.
He is. Yes, I think he's onto something.
And when you were approached by Newsmax for this article, how did they approach you?
They were aware of the work I've been doing, and they wanted me to comment on the Russian and Chinese angle. I sent them a much longer, it was a written interview, but we did email, and I sent them a much longer sort of take in which I addressed also the other two potentialities, that it's ours or that it's extraterrestrial. But because of my specific areas of expertise, they really wanted to focus on China and Russia.
One of our guests, Nick Pope, was also highlighted in the same article you were. And, you know, he's been a UFO buff for years, used to work on the British Ministry of Defense UFO files.
Yeah.
And he thinks that these leaked conclusions are both, as he says, intriguing and disturbing.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you basically have echoed that, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if we're ever going to get the full answer. I'm really not optimistic about the forthcoming report. I remember the 9/11 commission. I remember the commission or the panel that was assembled to review WMD and Iraq intelligence, and it was far more comprehensive and far more, you know, populated by top-tier researchers and people, and it had a lot of redundancies that allowed for them to get into the nooks and crannies of the bureaucracy. And that was for something that was significant but pretty short term in terms of intelligence that they needed to glean. This is a phenomenon that we've been encountering for decades, and the idea that in 180 days they're going to compile the so-called truth is fanciful, I think.
Could you make missiles hypersonic as well?
Yeah, hypersonic kill vehicle. It's a delivery system for delivering ordnance over a target in under half an hour.
Jeez.
At, you know, faster than the speed of sound. And it is truly revolutionary in its offensive capabilities that it would render a country deploying that system.
What do you think our military is doing right now?
Well, I think they're panicking.
If it's not ours.
Yeah, if it's not ours, I think that they're panicking, and I think they're trying to figure out, well, you know, how do we overcome this threat? It's a gap that we've allowed to form in the national armor, and there certainly is a surge not only of interest but in investment in this technology. But you know, the last place you want to be is coming from behind. Now, that tends to be an American, you know, a repeating theme in America's history, basically, where a rival gets a leg up on us and we come from behind. Think of...
Well, like the Russians did to us with Sputnik.
Right. But, you know, the problem is now, it's not one or two industries. It's like I said, biotech, nanotech, exotic materials, exotic technology in general. It's no longer only being developed here. It's now being developed in a bunch of places, and China's integrated into the world system so well that it can pull this information and these capabilities and sort of coalesce them in China and to build the next great, not only innovation like 5G, but also apply that to the national military realm and really stymie us and give themselves a hitherto unexperienced strategic offensive capabilities. It's very, very dangerous. And the military, our military is, I know they're very concerned that maybe they missed something. 9/11, mm-hmm. we missed something, and look what happened.
Big time.
That is a very serious concern on the minds of many people who are in the intel and military services, especially those who have been on since at least 9/11, that they missed something back then. Are we going to miss something again? And I fear that we are. And it's partly because we don't understand, like I said, the civilian kind of economy, the competitive nature, the culture in China's R&D sphere. We just assume they're little, in little ants, that they're just kind of, replicating what they see in the West. But it's much more than that. These are highly industrious, innovative people, and they have a history, 5,000 years of mostly greatness, and punctuated by a period of decline. And they blame us and the Europeans for that decline, a lot of it, and they want revenge. And they talk about this openly in their propaganda, and they teach their people this. And the regime there gloms onto it because that's a source of legitimacy in the eyes of their people, is inculcating the people there in this notion of never forget national humiliation, use it as a source to beat the Americans. And they're doing it.
If it's foreign, and I'll put that in quotes, if...
Yeah.
I highly doubt if it's both Russian and Chinese. It's probably just one of the countries.
Right. Well, and in this conversation, we really fixated on China, rightly so. But we should never forget the Russians. They are the inheritors of the Soviets' technology base, and the Russians are also highly industrious people. They're highly innovative people when they need to be. And so the Russians in particular for the last decade have really built out their own hypersonic capabilities. They've tested these weapons in the Arctic, fired them from submarines. That's why I bring up Russia along with China in my writings, because Russia has fixated also on a handful of high-tech areas like cyber, like hypersonic, artificial intelligence now they're starting to. And the space program, they're now partnering, Roscosmos, the Russian space program, is now partnering with China's space program to exclusively develop the moon, to create a manned base on the South Pole of the moon by 2028. That I believe will be more than just a scientific research facility. It will be like staking out the water holes in the desert. They'll be mining for rare earths on the moon. They'll be, setting up potentially defensive perimeters, taking advantage of the Earth-Moon system for defensive and military purposes, using the moon to then leapfrog and go to Mars and beyond. And so Russia also has some areas of high-tech competitiveness that they are exploiting with great elan, and we should not forget the Russian bear.
Let's go to the phones for you now, Brandon. We'll do that for the rest of the hour.
Yeah.
Keith is in Dallas, Texas, to get us started. Hi, Keith. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
And so this question is kind of, I think for a lot of us fans of the subject matter, kind of an elephant in the room, because it concerns the breakaway civilization theory. Richard Dolan, of course, has talked about this on the program. And what I would like to know is, what do you think, is it on a scale of 1 to 10, could essentially these advanced programs, covert programs, have broken off from the major governments of the world, the U.S. and the Soviet Union back in the day, stemming from Project Paperclip after World War II and beyond, and then became so compartmentalized and so broken off that what accounts for these sightings and this unidentified aerial phenomenon, could it actually be that it's another terrestrial power, the breakaway civilization beyond the control of any of the major geopolitical powers here on Earth?
Interesting take. I would highly doubt that, Brendan. What do you think?
I would say it's more likely, if it's ours, a compartmentalized agency or department within a department within an organization of the U.S. government. I would remind the audience that the ATIP program, which was the Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program, the former lead of which, Lou Elizondo, has kind of really taken this whole story of UAPs in the military public. Well, very few people knew about the existence of that $22 million a year program.
Within the government. They didn't know.
We forget about that little fact, and we seem to not want to apply that logic to the fact that there could very well be one or more small groups of researchers and military people working on advanced technology. I would remind also the audience that at least at several points in the 1980s and 70s, people looking out at Area 51 thinking they were seeing UFOs were actually seeing very early prototypes of the stealth bomber, which we know was, mm-hmm. was being built, you know, well before the reveal of the plane was made to the public, and that so that technology was about 20 years, you know, delayed in terms of revelation to the public. So I just always assume that I hope that our military is working on things that are 15 to 20 years ahead of what we have now.
You would hope so.
You would hope so. And if you assume that, then and we look at, for instance, China and the real high technology that they're doing. Why assume that they're incapable of it? Why assume even that the Russians are, especially when you look at the Cold War heritage of Russia? Russia was, at one time, a very competitive technology power. It waxed and waned, especially as that regime waxed and waned. But still, there's elements of technological competitiveness there in specific areas with a regime that does not like us and you know, resents American power on the world stage. And so we have to be open to the prospect that, that what we're witnessing is terrestrial, and if it is a U.S. military program, it might be so buried within the bureaucracy that even, you know, the leadership isn't aware of it. And when they say we don't know what it is, they might not be lying because the right hand isn't talking to the left hand again.
Let's go to Daniel, truck driving in Bristol, Tennessee. Welcome to the show, Bren. You're on the air for us, Daniel.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I forgot to do a shout-out last night to all the veterans out there on D-Day, and then even to you. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Because I know you're Navy. I was Air Force. I retired. I'm a combat veteran myself. Did a little over 20 years.
Wow.
So, and they paved the way for where we are today. So I wanted to give a shout-out to that. There was an old saying that we had and when I was in Iraq with the Army and the Air Force, and they would always say, "Hua," but we would say air power because who was enough.
That's good. I think President Biden forgot the D-Day yesterday.
Yeah. Yes, I know. That was pretty sad. That was very shameful. But
his staff's got to remind him, you know what?
Yeah, go ahead.
But go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, for all of us that did serve, you know, we make up for those that do forget. So we don't forget who they are. So, but my question to Brandon was earlier, because he did mention about the stealth fighter jet. Again, that technology was, like you said, 20 years in advance. And then, again, they let it be known later on to the public. But then think about, like, the B-1 bomber, the way how that looks. That looks like a UFO aircraft from the front. And then when it's flying in the sky, it's really weird because when it turns to a certain angle, it looks like a line in the sky.
Right.
And so, to me, I feel like that's our technology and probably the Air Force again. And it's like, why would you show your hand to the enemy anyways?
Sure.
You know, I wouldn't expose that. And to downplay it is the best thing to do, too, to always keep ourselves ahead of the game and keep ourselves abreast of the enemy.
Absolutely. And also, you know, I mentioned or someone mentioned earlier on in the show, the Phoenix Lights. And if you remember that image, it was a black triangle, like a giant version
huge.
Of a stealth bomber.
That's right.
Hovering over Phoenix in 1997. And if you look at and now it was flying a little bit differently. It was quiet. It was kind of floating almost, like it wasn't even really flying. But if you look at some of the so-called UFO patents in the Patent and Trademark Office from the U.S. Navy, the inertial mass reduction drive exhibits very, if it works, which I don't know, would exhibit very similar behaviors when put into action. And we know from the Popular Mechanics article on it that the Navy NAVAIR did actually demonstrate a working prototype of this device. And the gentleman who created it, Dr. Salvatore Pace, is now working he left the Navy and is now working with the Air Force, who is also very interested in the technology that he purports to have developed. And if you read his PhD thesis from Case Western Reserve University, you see that back in the 80s, he was talking about, you know, overcoming friction with these sort of exotic technologies and fringe science, what we consider to be fringe science. Who's to say he didn't figure it out? And another thing, when I was talking to this group of Air Force guys on the West Coast, they were talking about how they had to upgrade the radar systems. And one of the problems they had was they needed to bring in the best of the best from Silicon Valley and from Seattle. The problem was those technicians, those computer programmers, because they were pot smoking or whatever, they couldn't get security clearances. So the colonel had to basically do a workaround where they can only look at one system. They had to be segmented away. And he said they resolved the problem in no time. And I told him, I said, just imagine if you had opened up the whole system to them. He said they would have completely rewritten our architecture and probably made the country 10 times safer. But I can't give them access because of the way our bureaucracy works. And we know for a fact that the government has within its own sphere access to researchers that the public does not, and vice versa. And so, you know, there is a very real possibility that what we're witnessing, at least in part, are American technologies being demonstrated. It's just that the people seeing them, like Commander Fravor, like these other people in the U.S. military who see them, they don't know about these programs, and they can't process it properly.
Brandon, could this be Area 51 technology?
Certainly, and it's not just Area 51. I mean, we've got stuff out at, China Lake. You know, we've got a bevy, five now, you know, if you include Space Force. We've got a bunch of military operations as well as DARPA. As CIA has their science and technology division, which helped create the SR-71, which remains one of the most amazing, you know, aeronautical pieces of engineering that we've ever developed. So there's a bevy of government, private and government classified operations going on throughout the country, as well as in China and in Russia, any one of which could have potentially developed real game-changing technology like this.
Absolutely. Maureen's with us in Maui in Hawaii, west of the Rockies. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
In 2002, President Bush was conducting the World Summit at the Museum of Natural History in Manhattan. I was walking on a side street and entering Park Avenue. There's a Catholic church on Park Avenue. Above the dome of the Catholic church was an air vehicle, black, totally silent, hovering, and in midair, and spectacular.
Was it ours?
And triangular. It had to be ours. He was there to
promote it.
The World Summit.
Okay.
And to protect it. So he was spectacular and triangular. I must have looked dumbstruck because the pilot was hysterical laughing at me because I was walking right towards him.
Really?
Because he was in midair. He wasn't making any noise or anything else. He was just there.
He was looking down at you?
Anything like it. Yes, because we were coming basically face to face. Nobody walks on Park Avenue. And I'm coming towards him, and I must have looked absolutely dumbstruck.
How big was it? How big was it, Maureen?
It was a very good size.
Would you say as big as a regular plane?
Yeah.
And just kind of hovering up there.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Have you heard of this kind of technology, Brandon?
Well, I can't speak to her personal experience, but I mean,
that's weird.
You know, as I said, the technology that has been reported, at least by the military reports, you know, hovering, rapid maneuvers, you know, I don't know about this specific instance, but in the case of the documented recordings and whatnot, certainly, you know, it's something. It's one of three things, either ours, China, Russia, or aliens. We cannot discount the extraterrestrial possibility, but we really need to first get to the bottom of whether this is either ours, which is the hopeful, or that it's a rival nation, which is a nightmare. And
could it be another country outside of Russia and China?
It might be.
That's
shot. Israel has got an incredible, you know, technological capability. India is now developing.
India is. Japan is, too. We're going to come back and take final calls with you, Brandon, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Matthew McKay joins us next hour. He lost his son several years ago and has gone on to write a book called The Luminous Landscape of the Afterlife and also another one called Seeking Jordan, How He Learned the Truth About Death and the Invisible Universe. So we're looking forward to talking with Matthew about the other side. We're going to come back in a moment with Brandon Weikert and take final phone calls as well here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Brandon Weikert. Our final segment here, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, his book, Winning Space. Let's go back to the phones. East of the Rockies, Joe, Long Island, New York. Hello, Joseph.
Hey, Brandon. How you doing? Hi, George.
Hi.
I have two separate areas of questioning, but first on the missiles. Talking about the hypersonic missiles from Russia, supposedly they go so high in the atmosphere and so fast and pick up so much heat that they lose their aim, and theoretically, if they aimed it at one country, it could land in another country, starting a skirmish, obviously, in the wrong country. And also, you know, and I want to get to China, also regular drones, you know, that would deliver a pizza. I wonder how they maintain that signal. And also on China, I've heard that about 90% of the drugs that from Big Pharma or the pharmaceuticals are actually made in China, you know, maybe 1,000 different labs plus. Is this, could they potentially put like nanoparticles in a drug if with nefarious intent at one of these 1,000 labs if it was the wrong people?
Well, to your second point, as I noted, I cover biotech in China and sort of the exotic technology there. Regarding the antibiotics, for instance, we know that a lot of the precursors needed for antibiotic production are found in China. That China produces them. If you remember last year in January, right when the coronavirus was really taking off around the world, the World Health Organization, the head of it, the Ethiopian gentleman named, I think, Dr. Tedros, flew to Beijing because at that point, the Trump administration, Britain, and a lot of other countries were putting pressure on Beijing to fully acknowledge that, yes, coronavirus was a pandemic. And the WHO head flew to Beijing, ostensibly, everybody thought, to put pressure on Xi Jinping, the president of China, to say, hey, you need to announce that this is a pandemic so that the World Health Organization can initiate certain protocols at the global level. And everybody assumed that Tedros was going to get what he needed from Xi, and ultimately reports indicate that it was a four-hour monologue that Xi subjected Tedros to, in which he excoriated the WHO, excoriated Tedros, excoriated the West. And I happen to believe the reason that ultimately Tedros stepped out after the meeting with Xi Jinping and basically said, we're going to let China manage this, and when they say it's a pandemic, when they're ready to say that, we will let them. I think it was ultimately because I think Xi Jinping probably said, hey, World Health Organization, yeah, you're worried about a pandemic from coronavirus, but there's a lot of other diseases that you have to manage. And the last thing you probably would want would be China preventing the distribution or creation of antibiotics by denying the precursors needed for those medicines out of political revenge if you force China to come out and say this is a pandemic before they are ready to. I think that was the context. So I think you're right to point that out. There's a lot of supply chain vulnerabilities specifically emanating from China. And China's aware of our vulnerability and reliance on those supply chains. And they're absolutely willing and able to contaminate or threaten, or even just usually what they'll do is just slow walk, you know, prevent the distribution of the needed resources, whatever it may be, you know, to stymie and inconvenience us. To your first point, there are a bevy of reports, particularly in the National Interest, which is a very good publication. And there have been a bevy of reports indicating, as well as in a website called warisboring.com, in which they sort of there seems to be a debate raging within the technical community as to the efficacy of Russian hypersonic vehicles. And I certainly don't think Russian technology is perfect or impervious, particularly experimental technology. But I do think that the Russians have invested so much time and effort into this technology that it is a threat, and it's a real world threat. It isn't just something that's sort of in the development stage. They're building out prototypes in the real world. China is as well. We are starting to do this, but we are, again, I would say 3 to 7 years behind in many key aspects of hypersonic weapons development. So I would not get too comfortable with the idea that, well, it's Russian technology, it's not as effective. It is probably effective or good enough, and they will perfect it over time, especially if they think that we're behind them in it. That's an area that, like the Chinese, the Russians will then start pouring a lot of resources into. And by the way, we now have this problem of Chinese and Russian alliance forming. These are traditional historical enemies that are being brought together by a shared antipathy toward the United States and a love of authoritarianism. So technology sharing will happen naturally if that alliance continues to mature in the way that it has, even in the last 8 years.
Why can't people just get along, Brendan?
Huh? Well, what is it? Reagan said to the UN that, you know, if we were ever faced with sort of an extraterrestrial threat, that would be the thing that would unite us, probably, as we would all realize our common humanity. It's sad that it would have to take such an event to do that, but at this rate, it looks like it would, because people want what they want. Nations certainly do. The leadership of nations do. And in the case of China and Russia, you have authoritarian elites. And in the case of the United States, we have an elite system that is, not going to just ignore the world. And so that is the situation we all have to live through.
Let's go to Beth in Bristol, Wisconsin, Wildcard Line. Beth, you're on the air with us.
Good morning, George.
Hi there.
Hi, Brendan.
Hello.
My question is very simple. I feel like everybody's so, existential and over the rails. And I just have a simple question about reporting.
And what's the question?
I love Maureen from Maui, that she said she saw something. Well, I wanted to ask about things happen when I saw something and I didn't say anything. I saw a rocket. I'm a simple woman in Bristol, Wisconsin, and I go out to my front yard and I see a white rocket blaze up into the blue sky. And I'm a hop, skip, and a jump away from the Great Lakes Naval Base. And I didn't say anything. I just thought I saw something. And then I heard a few hours later that a woman saw it coming down. So I'm wondering about the importance of reporting something, even if it sounds crazy.
Well, I think a lot of people do report, don't they, Brendan?
Well, we have on the private side, they've got the MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network.
Sure.
People,
and we have the National UFO Center headed up by Peter Davenport.
Yeah, and then, Robert Bigelow, the billionaire, he's invested a lot of money into these in-depth sort of reporting, creating agencies or groups that sort of investigate and take seriously all manner of reporting. And Robert Bigelow is a pretty serious guy. Very interesting guy, head of Bigelow Aerospace, which is winning NASA contracts.
Yep, wants to put up floating hotels up there
in
space.
That's right. He's actually got DOD contracts as well. So, this is a serious guy. And in terms of reporting, I know that people call 911 with stuff like this. I know when I worked on Capitol Hill and a few times I manned the phones, we had people calling in reporting similar things in Gainesville, Florida. I worked for a congressman out of the 3rd District of Florida. And so, people report things. In the case of what you saw, I don't know. I wasn't there, and I don't like to speculate on these sorts of things. But if you were near a military base, it's probable that you were, you have seen or has some kind of testing has gone on around you. I think that's a key point here as well, is that a lot of civilians, a lot of people, ordinary people who aren't well-versed in sort of military technology development. It's easy to mistake, you know, military experiments, military technology with what we would consider to be UFO technology, you know, alien technology. And like I said earlier, the expectation that the government is always going to tell the truth on these issues, or that they're even aware of what other parts of the government or defense contractors are doing, it's not something you should be reliant on, because the government is inherently unreliable in terms of truth telling, and also in terms of knowing what one part of the government is doing. It's a crapshoot, frankly. And so.
To Austin, Texas, we go. Brendan, you're on with Brandon. Welcome to the program. Go ahead, Brendan.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, guys. Thank you both. So I'll make mine quick. We're almost out of time. Why do the videos that we have of the UAPs show circular craft, but our government's known for triangular craft?
Well, that's a great question. Again, I mean, we have different kinds of aircraft that we use, and so I don't know. Again, like I said, I'm not saying for sure this is, you know, our technology or even human technology. I'm leaving open the possibility for something otherworldly. I really think we have to really entertain the more human explanation first, and then if that doesn't pan out, then look to the otherworldly. You know, we have F-35s, F-16s, we have all kinds of craft. They're all aircraft, but they all look differently, and they all perform a different function. Who's to say that we or a rival nation aren't developing similar technologies and concepts that have different functions, but they are all exotic, and they all would appear to us, the untrained eye, or even to a military person who isn't aware of these technologies, as an alien or, you know, UFO event or UAP.
We've got David in New Mexico. Let's get you in here. Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen.
Hey there. Yeah,
say, I'm between Socorro and Roswell. I just looked out the window for y'all. It's all clear, nothing out there.
Nothing there. Darn.
Nothing there, yep, empty. And I was once in the middle of Arizona looking to the west, and I'm an airline transport pilot, and on the ground looking to the west, and a very strange light. Couldn't figure out what the heck it was. Learned the next day that it was a missile test going off of Vandenberg, which looked very strange from 1,000 miles away.
Yep.
Or at least 800. The point of clarification, hypersonic, our current spacecraft and ICBMs are hypersonic, which simply means, I believe, going faster than four times the speed of sound.
Right.
And I understand that the technology we're talking about is far advanced from our missiles that we currently have. And I have a question on the physics of those, of the objects in question that I want to ask you. But I want to interject also that I think our government, you're talking about our government earlier, I think our government knew about 9/11 in advance and chose not to do anything about it till afterward. And you brought up China earlier. Interesting point is how they're going out around the world. And I believe that there was an emperor a couple of millennia ago or whenever it was that burned their entire ocean fleet to keep China in China, if you want to comment on that. But my physics question is, I have several, but I'll just give you one.
Just one. We're running out of time, Dave.
Yeah. The change in direction of the object in question requiring hundreds or thousands of G-forces, which would literally tear any substance found on Earth in half or crush it. How do you explain the incredible G's on any material, whether it's from Earth or somewhere else?
Well, again, this cuts back to the exotic materials that are being developed right now by many major states, many science companies, scientific research labs. And this also gets into, in terms of the kinds of maneuvers, if these were craft employing things like the inertial wave reduction, or excuse me, inertial mass reduction drive that the Navy patented a few years ago, friction would not be an issue. It would overcome friction. It would operate. It would be a transmedium craft, just as the UAPs have been described by Lou Elizondo. It would exhibit the same kind of radical maneuverings that we are seeing on these videos. And the Ming Emperor is what you're talking about in terms of the treasure fleets being destroyed. But the emperor was not the one who did it. The emperor died in China, and then the bureaucrats took over, and they had no vision. And so Zheng He was the emerald, the eunuch emerald who led the treasure fleets. And he was, you know, removed from power when the Ming Emperor died, and his treasure fleets, the most advanced wooden fleet of ships, at the time in the world, were destroyed because the bureaucrats wanted to keep looking inward and worry about enemies within and all of that.
Brandon, the time has got us, my friend. Do keep in touch with us. Brandon Weikert, up next. Matthew McKay joins us, the luminous landscape of the afterlife.